The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Well, she's back. She's the cake mix, Dr. Ann Byrne. She's got a brand new unbelievable book. It's called Unbelievably Gluten-Free with 128 delicious recipes. Ann, welcome back.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you.
All right, now the cake mix, Doctor, this book is a little expanded from desserts, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I was on tour with a book 2 years ago. It was the Cake Mix Doctor Bakes Gluten-Free, and everywhere I went, people begged for dinner recipes. They loved the whole idea of my creating good-tasting gluten-free recipes, but they really wanted more. They wanted lasagna and gumbo and, you know, crab fritters and all kinds of things. And so it's been a really great project.
Well, why didn't you just say, hey, I'm the cake mix doctor. I'm not the dinner doctor.
That's right. Yeah, I have a hard time saying no. I think that's one problem. But, you know, everyone who's gluten-free, I really, my hat goes off to you, because there's so much work goes into their preparation for meals and planning and shopping and doing and avoiding. And if I can help them in any way make the foods that the recipes I've got to prepare at home taste better, you know, I'm in.
You and your family don't need gluten-free products. Is that right?
That's right. We don't. Although I think, you know, my brother-in-law in Atlanta, I really think probably he might. He's just sort of been avoiding the subject. But, you know, I've read so much about it. And so from two ways, one sort of from a food science way, I was really interested in this project. You know, what can I do sort of as a good cook, sort of chemist? How can I put flavors together, textures together, use acidic ingredients? What can I do to really improve the texture and flavor of gluten-free foods? And then also just, you know, it's interesting, the whole notion of, you know, gluten in our diet, and do we need as much as we do eat, you know? And I was thinking, well, you know, maybe I personally don't need as much. So this has been a really great project for me, not only sort of in the kitchen, but sort of, you know, in my head as well.
And you mentioned the chemist in you. Of course, uh-huh. Cooking is pretty much like chemistry. Are you a chemist from way back?
No, I'm not a chemist. You know, I did graduate with a degree in foods and food science, but I think that once you become a baker, you always question, you know, why a recipe worked, why the cake rose, why the cake didn't rise, and that's how you get better at it. So I've always loved learning more about baking, and I think that that really helped me in the first gluten-free book that I wrote, because I found that those acidic ingredients like buttermilk and orange juice, you know, really softened the texture of rice flour in my cakes and really made them taste less gritty. And so I kind of put that into this book as well. And I knew that when you get rid of gluten, which is the protein that's found in wheat, barley, and rye, when you get rid of that, you lack structure. So things don't hold together. So how can you improve that? Well, I found that an extra egg in a lot of recipes, such as the scones. I would add an egg to my scones in this new book, and the biscuits. That helped kind of bind those recipes together in the absence of wheat flour.
So in the Byrne household, are you like the mad scientist in the kitchen? You're just throwing things together, and then all of a sudden something takes and all kinds of bubbles and stuff, and it's just unbelievable?
That's funny. You know, I think I probably am at the point where it's not so mad anymore in this, but I still would love to try new products. I love to try new combinations of flavors. I can pretty much nail a recipe, you know, first, second go around, because I can look at recipes now, for instance, especially baking recipes, and tell if the ratios are correct, which is liquid versus flour versus sugar versus fat, or if they're not. And I look at a lot of recipes in print, especially online recipes, and I think, that'll never work. It'll never work. My daughters are forever sending me recipes. Mom, what do you think about this one? Something that they, you know, clipped online. And I'll say, don't spend a lot of money on the ingredients. It'll never work.
And when you were first starting out, of course, you just mentioned that, you know, you can tell now whether a recipe will mm-hmm. work. There must have been quite the challenge in the beginning of working things around until they did become something.
Oh, yeah. And that's how you learn it. Anything really is just trial and error. It is. And I remember taking years ago, taking a class, in Atlanta with Natalie Dupree. And it was a class of probably 12 of us in this room. And we all were given the same soup recipe. And I think it was a chicken and vegetable soup. We were given the same recipe. We had the same equipment. And the 12 of us set out to do the same recipe. And then we sat down and we had lunch and we sampled the soups and no soup tasted the same. And I learned then that no two people could make the same recipe the same way. Every time I cook, it's probably slightly different. So to me, I really embrace that side of cooking. I really like that sort of creative aspect in it. On the other hand, in something like writing a book that includes gluten-free recipes and baking, I have to be really, really precise and want people to be precise too, because even the smallest little measurement might make a difference.
And if I'm not familiar with gluten-free products, mm-hmm. what are those? Does a chicken have a lot of gluten in it?
No, gluten is a protein that's found in wheat, barley, and rye. So really you're talking about wheat products, barley, and rye. So, you know, put your head together. You're really talking about bread, beer, pizza, those sort of ingredients, foods. However, a lot of the processed foods that are out there have sort of hidden gluten. There are starches that are in a lot of luncheon meats. Any kind of breaded product is going to have gluten in it. So for someone who cannot tolerate gluten, their body just will not metabolize it. Even the smallest smidgen of gluten hidden in food can make them really sick. But foods today and ingredients are labeled much better than they used to be. If you see the small G on a food product on the front of it, that means that it's gluten-free. And in the book, I do give at the back some online sources where you can go. And if you're curious about a product, you can go and look and see if that product is indeed gluten-free, as well as going to the manufacturer's website. It's a lot easier than it used to be.
Gluten-free products, unbelievably gluten-free. Your brand new cookbook with 128 delicious recipes. This book, what, 2 years in the making?
Yes. It takes me about 2 years to do a book. A year of actually working on it in the kitchen, and then another year of them putting, you know, the photography and the book going into production. It was a really fun book to try. And as you said, I really, you know, my family eats a lot of these recipes now. I think that probably Americans eat too much gluten. I give a lot of really practical suggestions on how you can, say, make lasagna with brown rice noodles instead of regular wheat pasta. It's such an easy substitute, and I like them better because they're less starchy than wheat pasta is. And the lasagna, one lasagna recipe I have in there, you actually make the layers of the meat sauce, the ricotta cheese mixture, the mozzarella, and you can break up the raw, uncooked, you know, brown rice lasagna noodles and just sort of scatter them on in a layer. There's enough sauce and liquid when it bakes that they cook through. And because they're not wheat, they don't get all starchy and gummy and sort of take over. And I think it's a lovely lasagna. I have a lot of Asian sort of inspired recipes, Indian too. You know, so many more cuisines in the world are not gluten focused. I mean, they're really based on rice and creative seasonings. And so I looked for those for inspiration.
You know, like any great novel, I think your book, Unbelievably Gluten-Free, has a fantastic hook. And, you know, you were talking about the pictures earlier. And when you open up the book to the introductions, there's this fantastic picture that appears to be maybe an apple pie.
It is. Yes, it is. My husband's favorite dessert. It is an apple tart. But the sort of the gateway to that recipe was perfecting a gluten-free pie crust. And I had been at a gluten-free fair in Knoxville, Tennessee, maybe a year before that, before I was working on the book, and met a woman there, and I had demoed my strawberry cake that was gluten-free, and she came up to me afterwards and said, you know, if you ever do a book with gluten-free pies, I want to tell you the secret to making a great crust. And I said, well, go ahead and tell me now. And she said, it's cream cheese. Because she said, you'll find that when you work with a gluten-free crust, it crumbles because it's based on rice flour. It's real crumbly. But if you've got cream cheese in the dough, it holds together. And sure enough, we ended up kneading a pie crust, working on a pie crust. And she was right, because cream cheese does help pull the pie crust together, kind of like Play-Doh. And then you don't have that need to have to roll it with a roller and transfer it over to your pan. You can just take that ball of dough, put it in your pie pan, and just press it out with the palm of your hand. And then fill it. I mean, that's where we've got quiches and pies and chicken pot pies and tarts. And I think that is a real hallmark of gluten-free cooking, is that the freshness of flavors, those really good apples when you make that tart in the fall, the really great peaches in the summertime when you make a cobbler using that crust, those really come through, because you're not sort of trapped by this heavy, you know, it's not all about the crust or the bread or whatever. In gluten-free cooking, it's really all about everything else and the other ingredients.
When gluten-free products first came out, I heard that they were awful. And I'm talking about the store-bought stuff and everything. They just didn't taste the same. With your gluten-free products in unbelievably gluten-free, if somebody has tried commercially made products that just aren't that good, are they pretty much the same, do you think? Or how much better are they?
Well, there are a lot of gluten-free ingredients that aren't all that great. I'll be honest with you. And I'm quite honest in the book. And then, you know, we should say again, you know, I came out this project because I am not gluten-free and wanted, and also knew that gluten-free food can taste pretty awful, and wanted these recipes to taste great. So I was picky. I have a whole different bar set, and it's a lot higher. A lot of the products that I bought and tried, different flours and baking mixes and frozen pie crusts and all of them, and breads, pre-made breads, I thought they were terrible, and ended up not using them. I really whittled it down to a core handful of really mixes and blends of flours that I think are pretty good stuff. And I do mention those brands in here to help people, because there is a difference. When you choose a baking mix to make my biscuits, scones, quick breads, the pumpkin bread, the banana bread, look for rice flour, white rice flour, to be the main ingredient, the first ingredient on the mix, because that baking mix is going to be the most like white wheat flour. When you get into garbanzo bean flours and tapiocas and all kinds of different beans and starches, it changes the flavor of that basic baking mix, if you get my drift, and doesn't taste basic anymore. And it's really hard to do something with it. You know, you want to turn this sort of blank canvas into these great quick breads and muffins and biscuits. And if it's got a heavy garbanzo flavor and it's orange in color, it's really hard to do that. So I'm super picky, and the ingredients that I tell you to buy in my book are at the average supermarket, and they are pretty clean and basic, so that really that you can create food that you would never know was not gluten-free.
You've done the research. You've been the guinea pig for all of us. You found the best stuff that you can put the products in this book to make some fantastic tasting, just not desserts, but just all-around meals.
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, we made gumbo. A lot of this was from leads from other people, though, and I do credit the people in the book. You know, the gumbo, you can't make a traditional roux that goes in gumbo because you've got flour and, you know, in that one. But a wonderful lady in Wisconsin shared with me the way that she browns sticky rice flour, which is an ingredient you can find at Asian supermarkets. And I don't think you can find it at the average supermarket. You can find it like at a Whole Foods also, but it's called sticky rice flour. And you brown it in a cast iron skillet until it turns sort of caramelly color. And that is your roux. So when you make your gumbo and you've got the salt, the tomato portion of that, and you've got you added your seasonings, then you put in this browned sticky rice flour, and it thickens it up beautifully, and you get that roux taste that you want. The angel food cake recipe that's in here came from a woman in Austin, Texas, when I did a signing there. She was in the audience and shared with everybody how she used half sorghum flour, half sticky rice flour to make angel food cake. We made that cake on the first go. It worked. And at the photo shoot in New York for this book, that was the recipe that the all the photographers and stylists could not believe was gluten-free.
You know, the photography in this book, unbelievably gluten-free, is just fantastic.
Oh, well,
it looks like you could just take the page out and eat it.
They did a great job. We had a great photographer, Lucy Schaefer, and then Simon, the stylist, was a riot. He's an Australian guy. He was just so much fun to work with. But yeah, really beautiful pictures, very fresh. And I think that, you know, I have found with this book that the interest is much more mainstream. With the first baking book that I did gluten-free, most of the people who came to my signings had someone with celiac disease or in their family and were really needed to make cakes and birthday cakes for those people. This one is different. This is a lot of folks who cannot tolerate gluten for reasons of celiac or inflammation issues, MS, lupus, arthritis. A lot of parents are interested in a gluten-free diet for their children if they have ADHD, ADD, autism. People who have seriously high blood pressure are often advised by their doctors to go on a gluten-free diet because gluten is in a lot of processed foods, like I mentioned. You get off the processed foods, you reduce the sodium, you lower your blood pressure. It really is amazing. Cancer survivors will often go on a gluten-free diet because it's easier on their digestive system. So there's just a lot of reasons.
And, you know, I just had lunch, and I could sure use a dessert.
Oh,
I know
that we just happen to have one right here.
How about that? And they are fantastic-looking brownies.
Yeah, these are a saucepan brownie. They the flour in them is really just cocoa and a little bit of cornstarch. Super easy to make. You just melt a stick of butter in the saucepan, add your cocoa, a little bit of the cornstarch, sugar. You can use white sugar or dark brown sugar, eggs, a little bit of vanilla, pinch of salt, and then you fold in some chocolate chips. They go into like an 8-inch square pan. You don't need flour. And we love them. And this is really the only brownie that now I make at home. I love this recipe because it never gets stale. It doesn't have flour in it, so it doesn't dry out. They stay ooey-gooey and moist. You can keep them in the freezer and pull them out. You can heat them up in the microwave, put a scoop of ice cream on them. They're really good.
You know, this is kind of tough for me to believe. I mean, I've had some really good brownies before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you make them with the flour and sugar and everything else.
Yeah.
But this thing is delicious here and so moist.
Yeah, because it has no flour. This is essentially like a flourless chocolate cake, but we've got that little bit of cornstarch in there that holds it together a little bit better, so you're able to cut them into squares. But you still get that sort of really soft, velvety, almost mousse-like texture to it, and super chocolatey. If you're really crazy about chocolate, you can make sure that the chocolate chips you add are like a bittersweet chip. A more pronounced chocolate flavor. But yeah, I love them. I think it's great. And it's very eye-opening. And I think it's like a lot of the recipes in the book, it's very eye-opening that gluten-free food can actually really taste great and interesting and be fun and not be weird.
And, you know, looking at it, the color is just fantastic, and they look delicious. In your book, Unbelievably Gluten-Free, is there a warning on this page that you may eat more than you want to?
That's right. No, I didn't put that. But I did put a note at the bottom that said you can double this recipe if you like.
And you
make
may
it,
have to.
And make it in a larger pan. That's right.
Unbelievably Gluten-Free, let's go back to the last book, which had a lot of dessert, something that you're known for, because you are the cake mix doctor.
Right.
How did you get involved with gluten-free products and making that instead of products like your past books with the flour, the sugar,
right,
the eggs, the butter?
Well, you know, through the years, my readers have been really loyal and people have really loved my cakes. And I started receiving emails from a lot of readers, probably dating back to about 2006, asking me to consider a gluten-free cake mix doctor, but that they wanted Susan's lemon cake and my strawberry cake and my orange cake and the darn good chocolate cake and on and on. They wanted it gluten-free because somebody in their family had just developed celiac disease or was told by their doctor to go off of gluten. And they really wanted to continue baking. They really missed baking at home, but they could no longer have gluten. So that's why I wrote the first gluten-free book, just to kind of see if I could help them and make and bring them those cakes. And when going on tour with that book, I realized that they needed more, that their dinner was another hurdle for people who need to be gluten-free. And creating easy, and all my recipes always been easy and affordable and really so delicious that everybody wants the recipe.
Like some families, if you have diabetes in the family, you're cooking one way for another person.
Yes.
And you're cooking one way for you. Is it the same way with families that might have that person that needs that gluten-free diet?
Oh, absolutely. And they probably have to be more fastidious about it, because if you're really intolerant to gluten, you can't tolerate even a smidgen of it. And if you think about flour, it just scatters. You don't realize it, but it's microscopic the way it scatters. And I do have a section on the book on there how to sort of create a gluten-free zone in your kitchen if you've got to cook that way for just one member of the family. And one of the suggestions is to get a separate set of implements. Use stainless steel. Wooden spoons. Do not use a wooden spoon in your kitchen if you're going to transfer between both styles of cooking, because the cracks in a wooden spoon kind of harbor little pieces of flour. So some suggestions, you know, dedicate one drawer in the kitchen to those implements, and you got to clean out that drawer, because believe it or not, crumbs kind of find their way into drawers. And a separate toaster for a gluten-free family member. It's, you know, it is really interesting. But I'll tell you, it's been really worthwhile, and I have really enjoyed these projects. I've met some fantastic people. Folks who are on a gluten-free diet, I really put up with a lot, and it is their due that they finally get good ingredients to work with, and things and products are well labeled, and restaurants are offering gluten-free fare, because really it is about time.
And you know, you'd mentioned that just even a little smidgen of it, if somebody is, would you call it allergic to the flours, the wheat?
Well, allergic or even just intolerant. Their body won't metabolize it, yeah.
And just a smidgen will?
It can. It can set off a lot of people, but those are people who have celiac disease, which means they cannot tolerate any gluten at all. Some people are just sort of mildly sensitive to gluten, and that's fine. I mean, they'd be fine.
I was showing this book around, and somebody said, Aunt Bern, I've seen her someplace, and I know you've been on television a lot. What have you been doing lately?
What have I been doing lately? Still writing books. You know, I've also I've been working on my own line, actually, of cake mixes. They're not gluten-free, and they're actually in the market. They're in Texas, and they're going out through the Carolinas, so that's been a lot of fun. The mixes are the Cake Mix Doctor's mix, and they don't have any artificial ingredients in them. So that's been kind of busy at this foray into the grocery world. So it's fun. It's a fun time in food. You know, I think people are interested in good food, good clean ingredients, and really still nothing has changed in that they still need to feed a family.
What's the challenge of taking something from kitchen national?
A book or a product?
A
product. It's huge challenges, but you can do it. I'm actually an example of it. Really huge. I think that for the small person, it's not just conceptual. You've really got to follow through and get that product into production, finding the right place to make that product for you, and making sure that they've got those safeguards in check, that that's going to, you know, the product is going to be good. And then it's getting it distributed into the marketplace. You've got to learn that system. That's a whole nother layer. And then the marketing that's involved with keeping the product in the marketplace, competing with companies that are a heck of a lot bigger than you are. So definitely there are challenges out there. It's fascinating. But the good thing going in our favor is that I think the whole local movement and people really want to support I think local products, startup ideas. We're very much, America is such an entrepreneurial, creative country. It's a wonderful time for startups. So I think it's a very open-minded time as well.
So what's your thoughts on genetically engineered foods?
Well, I'm sure that there is a reason for them, and I'm sure there is a reason why we need to produce them. I haven't read enough about what possibly could be the ramifications in the future. I think that probably could be frightening. I do know that Europe has always been way ahead of us, way ahead of the U.S. when it comes to being concerned about what's in your food. I mean, in the U.K., people were onto gluten and new gluten, and you could find gluten-free foods years ago. So I think it's definitely going to be in our future. And with products being labeled non-GMO, I mean, Whole Foods now, I don't think they're taking any more new products in that have ingredients with genetically modified. So, you know, it should be interesting.
Yeah, no doubt.
Always sounds evolving.
Like Europe's on the cutting edge there.
Yes.
What's next for the Cake Mix Doctor?
I've got another book in the works. It's going to be a great book with Workman still publishing it. It's I can't really disclose the title yet, but it's a great title. But the whole gist is that I'm sharing recipes and stories from people across the country, and these recipes have a great story. They've got a great story, and the recipes are all go-to. There's a reason why they're in the book. You know, they're the signature recipe of this person, or they're the recipe that, you know, they always rely on at the last minute, you know, to win everybody's approval. So it's really, really fun. And I'm loving working on that, and that'll be out next year.
And if we want to find out more information about your past books, your brand new book, Unbelievably Gluten-Free, and to be the first to know about your brand new book, what's your website?
It's CakeMixDoctor, DOCTOR.com.
And, of course, with that, we're going to probably find maybe a few recipes. We're going to find out where you might be in case we're in a city close by.
Absolutely. We got all kinds of events there, event calendar, as well as lots of recipes and a blog about baking, you name it. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ann Byrne, A-N-N-E-B-Y-R-N, and then or Facebook.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to go get me a glass of milk and finish this brownie. It is delicious. Maybe I might even just take one more. It's almost like I can't get enough of this. And the food in here, unbelievably gluten-free. This book makes things just look unbelievably delicious to me. And thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Great to be here, Mark.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Ann Byrne. She's the Cake Mix Doctor and author of her brand new book, Unbelievably Gluten-Free. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.